You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Holly Kernan. Yesterday, we heard about how life with the possibility of parole is one of the only sentences in California with reform as a goal. And we heard from Lindsay Bolar, who spent 23 years behind bars before convincing the parole board he was ready to get out.
Lifers make up your best population in prison. Those lifers have put in 20, 25 years. So if you serve 20, 25 years, you know that the mad, stupid stuff don't go no more. Then all of a sudden, you're trying to find a meaning for your life and you want to go home. So lifers become rule-binding. They obey all rules.
And the system seems to work. Only 1% of lifers return to prison after being released, and almost never for another violent crime. Still, for the past 3 decades, it has been nearly impossible to be paroled. The reasons have less to do with public safety than politics. On the second segment in our 3-part series, we'll look at the political chutes and ladders of California's parole process. KALW's Joaquin Palomino has more.
Around a quarter of California inmates are serving life with the chance of parole. Also known as lifers, they're a unique group of inmates. For starters, most have committed a horrendous crime, typically murder, rape, or kidnapping.
The crime I was charged with was murder in the second degree, and that carries a maximum sentence of 15 to life.
That's J.B. Wells. In 1983, he was sentenced to life with the chance of parole. Chance being the key word. To be paroled, Wells had to participate in programs, build up a resume, and kick a steady drug habit.
I'm a published author. I've been in famous plays. I've played the part of Lucky in Waiting for Godot. I've played the part of John Brown in John Brown's Body. And I had a really, really fabulous prison experience.
It's pretty rare to hear an inmate say he's had a fabulous prison experience. Wells' experience was largely shaped by his sentence. Life with a chance of parole is one of the only indeterminate sentences in California, meaning you can't get out until you prove you're ready. Barry Crisberg is the research and policy director at UC Berkeley's Earl Warren Institute.
The theory behind indeterminate sentencing and behind parole was some independent, objective set of experts would look at this person, look at their psychology, look at their behavior, look at the totality of the situation, and make a reasonable decision.
There aren't too many indeterminate sentences left, but they used to be the norm.
California sentencing law for almost the entire 20th century consisted of a system in which offenders would get very broad sentences. 5 years to life was a fairly typical sentence. And then the final decision as to whether or not you would be released would be determined by a parole board.
The parole board would theoretically base its decision on how reformed the inmate was. But there were flaws in the process.
In 1979, there were a number of forces that led to the end of that system and the replacement of that system with determinate sentencing.
The driving force to this overhaul was fairness. One person might get 4 years in prison for dealing drugs and another 6 months for the same crime. This led to countless accusations of discrimination. Determinate sentencing fixed that.
Under determinate sentencing, for virtually every crime, there are 3 potential sentences that the judge can choose from: a high sentence, a medium sentence, and a low sentence. So under determinate sentencing, you walked out of the courtroom knowing exactly how much time you were going to serve.
With the change in sentencing, the state also had to rewrite the penal code. So the legislature was put in charge of deciding which crimes carried which sentences.
And so suddenly, in this very political environment, with everybody watching, with the media there, you have elected officials who don't necessarily have training or background deciding how much penalty should be given to a given crime.
And Crisberg says that shift sparked an era of tough-on-crime politics in California.
And it almost becomes a bidding war. you know, I want to show that I'm tougher than you. So if you think a rapist should get 10 years, I think he should get 20 years. So there's been this natural escalation upward.
Life with the chance of parole was one of the few sentences excluded from this overhaul, but it wasn't excluded from the trend towards toughness.
The basic presumption that somebody with a life sentence would get out at some normal term just went out the door.
For most of the 90s and in the early 2000s, the chance of being paroled on a life sentence was under 1%. Last year, it peaked at 18%, the highest it's been in 30 years. So why has it been so difficult for lifers to gain release?
Particularly in the 1990s and into the 21st century, California was in the grips of what I would call a moral panic about crime. Voters were concerned of it. People would get defeated for office because of it. We'd have statewide elections that were strictly about criminal justice sentencing.
It was in this crime frenzy that governors became intricately tied to the parole process.
And then, in fact, there was a ballot measure which said even if the parole board granted parole, the governor could overturn it.
And the governor often does just that.
I mean, the politics of this is that if you're the governor and you release somebody or your parole board releases somebody, and then that person commits a crime, it's going to be thrown in your face in the next election. In fact, the politics were irresistible to not parole anyone.
Under Governors Pete Wilson and Gray Davis, almost no life prisoners were released. And Schwarzenegger reversed 80% of his parole board's decisions.
Governor Brown is doing a little bit more in terms of paroling, but essentially the parole process has really become stuck.
J.B. Wells was one of the people who got stuck.
I was eligible in July of 1990.
And time after time, he went in front of the parole board just to be rejected.
The gravity of the offense, the heinousness of the crime, the commitment offense, that was used over and over again.
He was turned down 10 times.
I was 21 years past my minimum eligible parole date.
Then in 2008, the California Supreme Court changed the rules. The justices decided that a lifer's original crime cannot be the sole factor in the decision to grant or deny parole.
And the courts eventually said you just can't, that one just cannot continue to use that over and over and over again because that's something that a prisoner can't change.
This law helped Wells and many others be freed. Wells says having an indeterminate sentence which aims to rehabilitate in a prison system guided by punishment creates some pretty noticeable contradictions.
And at the end of the day, corrections was actually about the bumping of heads between those people that felt that prison should be for punishment and those people that felt that prison should be for rehabilitation. Every day I experienced administrators, guards, and other people that were in charge of various functions in the prison trying to do everything they can to be helpful, to be kind, to be patient. But there's always a few that do everything that they can to make your life as hard and as miserable as they can because they honestly believe and they have a right to their belief and their opinion that prison should be as for punishment. So they're constantly looking for ways to punish.
The main theme in the past 30 years of California criminal justice has been punishment. Many believe that is the root of the state's current prison crisis and for the ballooning population of lifers. There are signs, though, that California might be moving away from its tough-on-crime trend. In 2004, Governor Schwarzenegger put rehabilitation back into the California Department of Corrections. Some lawmakers are even wondering if a return to indeterminate sentencing might be in order. For Cross Currents, I'm Joaquin Palomino.
That was the second piece in our three-part series on indeterminate sentencing. There's a lot to talk about, and many people are looking to change California's entire approach to criminal justice.
The whole idea is to take some of the bombastic posturing out of criminal justice policy and treat criminal justice as what it really is, a government program that should be subject to some kind of rational cost-benefit analysis.
Tomorrow, in the final part of this series, we'll examine calls for a statewide sentencing commission and how that could affect the prison system's approach to rehabilitation.